What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, I got my real life, not so much pick and pop partner, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
It was good to play again and light your ass up.
Dude, you're like 5'4", man. There's no way anyone's playing defense with that.
Hey, man, your wingspan can't hold me.
No, definitely cannot. My 6-foot wingspan is too short for you.
You're half a wingspan.
Banger in the paint. Rajan Walia, how you feeling today, man?
You know what? Not feeling too bad. We have a lot to talk about. But you know what? I'm jealous that you guys got to touch a basketball because I haven't really touched a ball since COVID.
Like whatsoever? Not even to get shots up?
I got shots up, but like it was at a shitty rim, bad ball, no air, like 30 minutes.
Man, that's sad. I don't know what I'm going to do once this all shuts down, but it's going to get too cold out there, man.
Plus all the gyms are shut down, obviously.
Yeah, going to have to play like in the ice, like when we were kids all over again. You guys ever do that at recess? Just play like dead cold-ass basketball?
Yeah,
like you just don't dribble the ball and you try to catch the ball as it's going through the rim or off the rim. It's brutal.
Try to knock off the icicles from the rim.
Oh, the woes of being in Canada, man. All right, we're recording on Monday evening. It's around 7 o'clock. And a couple of hours ago, Josh, your boy Woj, dropped a bomb on everybody. I think some of us should have seen this coming. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of this guy as a coach, but Doc Rivers is now gone from the LA Clippers. The two sides have mutually decided to leave or, you know, separate from each other. I think that's kind of weird terminology, but whatever. It's done. It's gone. Doc was once traded to the Clippers for a second round draft pick. Remember, you can trade for coaches only for a second round pick. He's gone. He's definitely made a lot more as a coach than he ever did as a player. He's been inspirational. He was a major movement, or he was a major player in the Black Lives Movement this summer, especially in the bubble. And you know what? It's about time. I'm not going to lie. I'm not a big fan of Doc on the floor. He's very inspirational. He's a great player's coach. I don't think any players have talked shit about him after leaving, other than, you know, Joe Ingles, but that's for different reasons. But, I mean, Doc is beloved. Josh, how long till Doc finds another job?
I mean, according to reports as of 20 minutes ago, I mean, it may not take very long since New Orleans and Philadelphia, I believe, have already called him. So he's obviously going to be a top three coaching candidate that's out there. But, oh, man, there's so many jokes to be had out of this. I mean, with the Clippers, you know, coaching carousel here, I think whoever, you know, gets past the second interview is going to, or the second round of interviews, I should say, might have a really good shot at, you know, becoming the next Clippers head coach here.
Ooh, I see what you did there.
Yeah, I saw you. I got it.
And, you know, Nick Nurse is obviously the last, you know, medical personnel slash head coach in the NBA right now, too. So that's also something.
Wow, good job. What are you gonna do with Roger, what are you gonna do without Doc's raspy ass voice on post game interviews now? How are you gonna go through the year?
You know what? My ears are finally gonna get a break until he ends up joining one of those two teams. But there's two stories here, and I think the main one is him leaving the Clippers after obviously not meeting expectations. This year, and I would say in the years when they had Griffin, Paul, and DeAndre, and Redick, and they had some competitive teams, and I think Doc is a great talk about motivational speaker, but I think he really lacks in the X's and O's, and his offensive strategy this year was just so disjointed, and the team never looked like it was clicking, and never looked like they were getting the best out of Kawhi, PG. Individually, they had good games, but as a team, they didn't play well.
Yeah, they just didn't have a pure identity as to what they were going to do on a nightly basis because, I mean, a lot of that is Kawhi and the injuries that they had throughout the season in that they couldn't really gain any sort of chemistry and, you know, had to play with each other on both sides of the ball, really. Offensively, they were a bit disjointed, especially in the playoffs. But defensively, you would think that with all the players that they had, they would be a defensive juggernaut. And, you know, now you have Kawhi's trainer, I believe, going after Paul George on Twitter. And you have him going after Montrezl Harrell as well, saying that Montrezl Harrell is playing a double agent and that Paul George, you know, is not reliable. So they have a lot of issues there. So I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if Paul George may be the next person out there, especially if Kawhi signs off on it. Because you would figure, like, in this situation, Kawhi must have signed off on this movement here. So it makes you wonder who Kawhi is going to want as a head coach next. I think that guys like Tyronn Lue, possibly. People are bringing up Sam Cassell. There's obviously a connection there, so you never know.
Are you saying that Kawhi is going to trade away Paul George this summer or this offseason, I guess?
Kawhi a Terminator, right? So he's already seen how Paul George reacts to pressure on his team. And if he sees that, you know, Paul George is not going to be the guy with him, maybe he's going to say, you know what, give me somebody else or else I'm going to leave next year. Kawhi has all the power, obviously.
Yeah, I'm just going to jump in and say that I think Paul George showed a lot in terms of his performance on the court, but especially kind of his response off the court. He kind of had a laissez-faire attitude. He seemed like, you know what, like this isn't a big deal. We'll keep working at it. And I don't think for Kawhi that's the message that your co-star wants to be sending out. And on the court, I think there could be an issue in terms of getting the optimal play from Kawhi, because Paul George is a star that needs the ball a lot in his hands. He, without the ball in his hands, he hasn't really done so well this year. And to have two players that are so ball dominant with Lou Williams, well, that just raises a few questions. So I think if I had to put money, I think George is like 50-50 going to be a Clipper in 2022. I think this year they run it back, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're on the market to trade him to get one amazing piece to really push them over the top.
So what if the Lakers lose this finals game, this final series against the Heat? Can we just see AD take his talents across the locker room straight to the LA Clippers change room?
Come on. Simple as that. Come on, Peter. That's blasphemy. Like, don't even entertain that idea. AD is all about the attention that LeBron gathers, and Kawhi is the polar opposite. Like, he wants someone who just, like, keeps quiet, keeps to themselves, plays hard. Not to say AD doesn't do any of that, but AD definitely loves the glitz and glamour of playing for the Lakers, and he loves the whole show that LeBron puts on. He's pretty much a fanboy.
Ouch.
I would love the chaos that would create, because Lakers fans absolutely despise Paul George after he didn't come, you know, play for the Lakers after basically saying, while in Indiana, he wants to be a Laker in about a year's time. And then he ends up on the Clippers, and then he quits the way he did. And the way he was talking after, you know, in the post-game press conference, like you referred to, just saying that, you know, it wasn't their time. And, you know, they didn't have to win this year. So if the Lakers end up losing AD out of this and then got, you know, Paul George, that's the level of chaos I love. I would definitely love that if that happened, just to see the Lakers fans crying. That's what I live for.
Yeah, as a non-LA fan, that's exactly what I want, just pure chaos in that locker room in Staples. And then, like,
and
2 years.
And then they fire Coach Vogel and then hire Jason Kidd.
Ooh.
That too.
What if Jason Kidd just goes across the locker room or down the hall and goes to the Clippers?
You know what? I'm going to make a Charles Barkley guarantee right now. Tyronn Lue will be the head coach of the Clippers next year. Guarantee!
Wow, you just jinxed your own guarantee. So it just happened in my mind.
Well, it's for me and not Barkley, so it's going to happen.
Ty Lue is not going to get another head coaching role ever thanks to Josh's guarantees now. Come on,
no,
man.
I mean, like, Ty Lue's been in the situation before, replacing a head coach that had massive expectations to win a championship. So he's basically walking in the same type of scenario with, you know, star players in hand and a team that's expected to win next year and a team that has better talent than, what, 97% of the league, if not 100% of the league right now. depends what they do in the offseason, obviously, with payroll and a few other things. But, you know, I think it's a perfect situation for him to come into.
Yeah, let's do this quickly. Do you think they re-sign Harrell this offseason, Raj? Does he get paid? Or did he lose all of his money in this poor performance of an offseason?
I think he's going to get paid, and I think the Clippers will probably retain him. I think they have a few question marks in terms of how they're going to add a bit more young depth, because obviously they had players like Jermichael Green. They're probably not going to end up keeping Marcus Morris. So they have a few veterans on their team that I don't know if they're going to be here next season, but I think Harrell stays and he'll get paid. He won't get paid as much as he would have if there was no bubble.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think that he'll probably stay, but I think it's going to be on a much either shorter term contract or maybe both shorter term and lesser money. I can see him signing like a 2-year, $30 million deal. I don't think he's going to get much more than 15 per year after the way he performed. And then plus how the salary cap's going to be structured next year. And not a lot of teams having salary cap space that would offer Montrezl Harrell a bigger type of deal. So I can see him taking like a, you know, sort of like what Lowry sort of did, but lesser money. He's taking like a 2 to 3 year contract that less than a lot of people were projecting at the start of the year.
Yeah, I tend to disagree there. I think Harrell wants a bit more of a stability, especially because he probably lost himself like $5 million over the course of 2 years or $2 or $3 million per year just with his performance in the playoffs. I think he's going to look more to sign a deal no shorter than 3 years. I could see him signing for like 4 years, $50 million, with a big chunk of that being guaranteed, like 30-something being guaranteed.
I don't know. I think I disagree with that. I think that, like, with the Clippers situation right now, with Kawhi and PG coming up as of next offseason, assuming that they keep Paul George, I don't think they want to sign anybody long-term right now, which is another reason why they probably offered Lou Williams what they did, and somehow he signed that extension, which is still perplexing to me. But the man loves L.A., and he loves his hot wings, so props to Lou Will.
Props to Lou Will, indeed. All right, guys, let's move on. We got ourselves a finals matchup. But before we go there, before we talk about the Lakers and the Heat, I want to talk about the two teams that they bumped out. Unfortunately, guys, my beloved Nuggets had to go fishing, according to NBA on TNT. On Friday night, the Nuggets were eliminated. They got dominated. They finally saw what LeBron really does in elimination games, basically, right? In five. And then the Celtics lost in six. Same thing. Couldn't handle the pressure. The Heat were too much. Bam Adebayo just had a monstrous performance. So, I don't know, Josh, where do you want to start? You want to talk about the Celtics going forward? And give me a little something inspirational about this team, because they got a young core that's going to pop off going forward, right?
First of all, you messed up your monologue. You should have said they couldn't handle the Heat, not the pressure.
Didn't I say that?
No,
I didn't say that.
Yeah. They couldn't handle the Heat.
My bad. That's my fault.
I mean, with the Celtics, Marcus Smart shooting like 21 or 22 field goal attempts in a closeout scenario wasn't obviously ideal. And the way they just looked, I don't know, they didn't look right in the last 6 minutes of the game. I think a lot of that has to come down to the decision-making of like Kemba Walker and Jason Tatum. They were rushing a lot of shots early in the shot clock against Miami's zone. And obviously you have like Kemba and, you know, Hayward for at least another year, with Hayward most likely going to opt into his contract. So they have a lot of money in the books right now. And, you know, they have a good situation, obviously, in that they're going into next year probably as the favorite to come out of the East, depending on what Miami does this offseason, how much they get better. And obviously what Toronto is going to be doing with their big guys and potentially Lowry going forward. And obviously now the news coming out of Indiana, where Oladipo may not be staying there too. So it sounds like they're still in a great scenario. And I thought they were going to win this series because I just thought they were more talented than Miami was. But I think ultimately they just got outcoached in the series. But they obviously have a lot to look forward to with you know, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, even though I'm still not a fan of his. But, you know, and then going forward, I think they're the favorite as of right now to come out of the East next year if you're just looking at their rosters versus everyone else and the moves they could potentially make over the course of the offseason to maybe get one more big guy in there.
You can say it. They fell victim to hero ball.
There you go. That's much better.
There it is.
We're going with all the puns today, eh?
Hey, man, if you got any more, just throw them out there.
Yeah, I'll leave the clever parts to you. But I just want to jump on and say that, Josh, I don't think anyone would disagree to say that Boston has a better team on paper than the Heat. The Heat just outplayed them. And more importantly, I think Eric Spoelstra outcoached Brad Stevens. Boston had a lead in 5 out of the 6 games in the fourth quarter, and sometimes they have a double-digit lead, and they end up losing 2 or 3 of those games. So it really comes down to execution. And I think the telltale sign for me is the Celtics were very versatile. That's one thing that really caused the Raptors a lot of problems. That's what makes them difficult to play against. But I think when they were facing that zone, they didn't have clear roles, and they refused to attack the rim. I know it's easier said than done, but I think it was just, like you mentioned, it was too much settling for the first shot available instead of looking for a better shot. And you could tell that they shot 46 three-pointers, 46, which is almost like Rockets level in a closeout game. And I think they're having a lot of success getting to the rim, but all of a sudden they go down 5 or 6 points and they just start shooting threes. The first three they get, they shoot, and it's not the best shot. And I know Brad Stevens came out and said that the Heat were the better team in the East, and all credit goes to the Heat. They played amazing. I think they're still exceeding expectations, but they have a great culture going on. They have good leadership. And their players know their role. Like Crowder knows his role. Iguodala knows his role. Robinson knows his role. I don't know if the Celtics can say the same, but they have a good future coming up. I think the way they should approach the offseason is really try to work on developing a bit more roles in the team and knowing, hey, you can't just rely on Tatum running down the clock and taking late shots and making some miraculous threes. Like you need to have a few different avenues of scoring.
How much of that would we put towards just, you know, being gassed at the end of the game? You're looking at, like, your main two starters, right? Jason Tatum playing 44 minutes and Jaylen Brown playing 40. And we already talked about the team essentially losing it in the last, like, what, 7 minutes? That's when Hero got off for 5 quick points and then Bam had that insane dunk over Tice, right? You could just see that the Heat had more pep in their step, for lack of better terms. They have a deeper team. We've already talked about that, right? And their guys are just ready. I mean, there's something about just having fresh legs and veteran players rather than, you know, having to play Daniel Tice, having to rely on Gordon Hayward, who's coming off a grade 2 ankle sprain for 32 minutes, and Kemba playing 35. Marcus Smart led or was second on the team in field goal attempts with 22 field goal attempts. It's not very deep, right? And with a team that's not so deep, you're going to end up playing a lot of minutes. And honestly, at the end of a game, 6-game series, they played 7 against Toronto the series before, which pretty much were all like tight games. It makes sense that they were gassed towards the end. Like it looked like they had nothing left. And to your point, Raj, that's probably why they were settling for jumpers most of the time. Like how can you really beat the zone if you're that tired?
Yeah. There definitely was an element of fatigue. And of course, that has to do with the Celtics not trusting their bench guys. But I think the main reason the Celtics had lost this series wasn't because they didn't have the talent or they didn't have the talent to beat the Heat. It was because they got outcoached, as Josh mentioned. And I think with a few different adjustments, and I think one thing that Eric Spoelstra does a great job of, and I think in coaching probably gets a little undervalued, is knowing when your player is playing well and sticking with that. And there was a moment in the game where Grant Williams was doing a better job guarding Bam in terms of he was able to press Bam a little higher up the court and stay with him. And that was tiring Bam out. Like he was gassed on a few of the timeouts. And then all of a sudden, because you want to stick with your guys, because that's what your rotations say, that's what the Excel sheet says, you have to go with Tice. And I remember Tice was on the court for probably 3 minutes. He picked up 2 fouls and they went -8. And it was literally Bam just attacking the rim, passing to Butler under the rim for a layup. And honestly, that's on Stevens. And that's just the same thing we scolded Nick Nurse for playing Gasol and
and keeping him in the game in the second half on the game seven. It's the same thing with Brad Stevens. Like, obviously sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but I think they have to be a bit more flexible and play the matchup and play who's playing well that game.
Yeah, Josh, you're going to take that insult to your Excel sheets?
It hurts. It truly does. But yeah, I mean, like, going back to the whole tire thing, like, it feels like if Boston played more zone in playing these guys, you know, 44 minutes, as, you know, Raj mentioned, these guys might have been, you know, their stamina level would have been better, their energy level would have been better come fourth quarter. Maybe they don't take all the shots early in the shot clock, and they're trying to keep the ball around more and use more, give the ball more energy, essentially, throughout the shot clock, and try to get better looks like they were getting in the first half. Because, you know, what the zone does, it allows you to play in one spot and not have to, you know, close out on guys and run to the next guy. It's sort of like that frantic type of defense that all these teams play, including, like, the Raptors play the same type of style where they're just running around the perimeter the entire game, and you need to be able to have some juice left in your legs come the fourth quarter. So it feels like that is one specific area where Boston could have adjusted and played a lot more zone just to keep these guys fresh on offense, really. And the other thing that impressed me with Miami was once they found a weakness throughout a specific game, they would just continue just to pound that. Because you didn't see Bam Adebayo bringing the ball up going point center in any of the other games, just going straight at Tice. Like, he wasn't even looking for those dribble handoffs like he usually does throughout the game. You could just see, like, his whole mission. Like, he was probably told, like, you need to bring them off the court. Don't even look for Jimmy Butler or Duncan Robinson off pin downs. Just go straight at them. They're going to foul you or you're going to score. Because Boston's not going to try to lay off the corners, right? So just those little things. And obviously in that Tyler Hero game, they just kept going to him over and over and over again with the same sort of plays because they saw Boston couldn't stop it. And within a specific game, this is the main reason why I think Miami has a good chance against the Lakers. Eric Spoelstra is able to recognize little things like that to where during a 3 to 4 minute span, you basically just do like the whole NBA 2K thing and just keep spamming what's working. Spam the shit out of it until they stop it. And that's what impresses me about him, because most coaches go away from it and they're like, oh, Jimmy Butler hasn't had a touch in a while, so let's go to him now. But no, he's just like, nope, Tyler Hero's rolling, Bam Adebayo's rolling, get them the rock and get the fuck out of the way.
Yeah, like there's an element that goes beyond the stats and the Excel sheets and all that. Like, I think there's an element of, like, yes, this player is playing well, like, he's finding his stroke, he's being able to get by his man, he has confidence. And unfortunately, confidence isn't really a measurable stat. And I think, again, talking about the Celtics going forward next year, they have a good team. They do definitely have to rely a little more on their bench next year, just because they need those players playing important minutes in the bench so they can trust them in the playoffs. Because you can't be playing your starters 44 minutes a game every game in the playoffs and expect to have anything left for the finals.
Well, unfortunately for the Boston Celtics, their cap spending is going to go up a lot this summer, or this offseason, I guess. Right now, they're sitting at 121 for the year. They're going up to 140.5 next year because Jaylen Brown's extension contract is about to kick in. So good luck to that team for getting anyone in the offseason, man. Because with 140, we're expecting the salary cap to go down, if anything. Good friggin' luck, my friend. But, you know, keep it in that hot hand, I guess. Guys, I got to go to a little bit of my homer side with this Nuggets team because I'm going to say it, man. LeBron got a little away with a lot of calls. I don't want to be that guy. I don't like being that internet nerd who just complains saying that his team doesn't get the calls, but I'm not alone in this. LeBron and Anthony Davis did get a lot of calls in this series. In every game, there was at least one or two plays where LeBron came charging down the lane and, you know, just piled through Jeremy Grant or Torrey Craig, who were just standing there. Obviously, no block call or no charge call. It was always a block. And, you know, that game five, LeBron just went Super Saiyan, for lack of better terms. What did he have, Josh? I think we were looking at like 39 points, something like that. 38?
30-something, 16 and 10.
38, 16 and 10 in 40 minutes. That streak in the fourth quarter where LeBron hit three pull-up jumpers and then a three was absolutely incredible. And the Nuggets, you know, they finally saw what elimination game LeBron is really like, right? I hate to say it, man. I hated seeing the Nuggets lose in this manner. They were pretty close in, like, most of the games. I'd say all but one were relatively close until the final game. So, yeah, lost on that buzzer beater to Anthony Davis, obviously. And the team looks awesome going forward. They're obviously going to build around Jamal Murray. We're looking at Nikola Jokic. Both guys have major extensions already. Gary Harris is still in the books. Raj, I know you're not a big fan of his, but once he came back from that injury this playoff run, you saw how valuable he really was for this team, adding a lot of depth. He's obviously a good defender, decent shooter usually, but didn't show up so well this year. And the best part about all of this, guys, is that Mason Plumlee and Paul Millsap are finally off the books. We're looking at $30.5 million for Millsap and $14 million for Plumlee. Yo, can you believe that Mason Plumlee was paid $14 million to not stick to Anthony Davis on the last shot of a playoff game? Can you believe that?
And Josh thinks that Harrell is going to get paid $15 million a year. That's just blasphemy. Like, he's probably going to settle for more, but that's, again, we talked about that already. But talking about the Nuggets and that series, I think that shot that Anthony Davis hit probably broke their backs. And if the Nuggets had won that game, I think obviously the series could have went different ways, but they were in every game in the series. I think that what really hurt them was, I think they got into a lot of foul trouble, and especially that fifth game. The Nuggets played well. Like, they were in the game. I think what really hurt them is Jokic picking up some very lazy fouls and unfortunately getting to foul trouble early, but good on the Lakers. They attacked the Nuggets and made them pay. And I think overall the Nuggets exceeded expectations because everyone was expecting this to be a Clippers and Lakers like Western Conference Finals. And one thing that's amazing for the Nuggets is the manner in which they did it. They came back 3-1 down from against Utah, came back 3-1 down against the Clippers. Jamal Murray now is in the conversation for like superstar status. I wouldn't say he's quite there yet, but I think he's on the same level as Paul George in terms of recognition that he should be getting around the league. He hit some clutch shots, and most players in the NBA, they make their names in the playoffs. So hopefully this confidence will continue going forward. They have obviously a young core with Jokic, Michael Porter Jr. and Murray. Get rid of Millsap, get rid of Plumlee. I think there'll be, obviously, re-sign Jeremy Grant. I think there'll be a real interesting question mark of whether they should re-sign Torrey Craig. I think they can probably get another player who's good at ball handling, another two guard who's like decent ball handler who can guard multiple positions, and is really ideally a good 3-and-D kind of player. So
they have that already.
With Craig?
No.
With Gary Harris. Yeah, well, they did miss him this playoffs.
The player you're describing is Will Barton.
Yeah, but he's not a greatest defender.
He's okay. You're not going to get a better player, in terms of 3-and-D, and just being able to handle the ball like Barton does at, like, what's he making, $14 million a year? He's got a pretty good contract. Like, the Nuggets are in one of the best cap positions in the NBA by far, like you mentioned. And they have, I think, 7 of their quality role players or players in general signed up for next season. They got Monte Morris, who's on a player option, which the team is going to obviously do that with $1.7 million next season. And PJ Dozier, same idea. And he's a guy that, you know, broke out in certain games in the playoffs as well. So you already have probably 9 guys now that, basically signed the contracts. And then Jeremy Grant is probably going to be re-signed as well. So the Nuggets' future looks very bright right now because they got the right guys on pretty good contracts, and they're well set up for the future, like you mentioned. But I think the biggest thing is Jokic and how he learns from this experience. Because in all the games against the Lakers, he either had 5 or 4 fouls in all 5 games, and he has to get in better shape in order for them to go to the championship level. I think they have a quality of team that's only going to improve, but the only way that they get to the finals and win, even as early as next season, which I think they can do, with Porter improving and Jeremy Grant coming back. Because you can get away with playing Porter and Grant at the 3 and the 4 because both those guys are, granted, at times is inconsistent, but Porter is a really good rebounder. And obviously, you know, Jokic is one of the best rebounding players in the NBA. So you can get away with that as long as Porter takes a bit of a leap on defense and goes from absolutely putrid to terrible. And then Jokic just gets a little bit quicker and, you know, obviously gains experience from this postseason and just says to himself, I need to be better on defense, at least be average consistently. If they do that, Murray plays the way he did in the playoffs, which he's shown, you know, basically two straight years now. The Nuggets won't be like, you know, favorites or anything going into next season, but come playoff time, they're going to be really hard to beat.
Yeah,
you know, Michael Porter played defense. Don't you remember that stop on LeBron he had?
Yeah, that one play out of the entire postseason.
Forced to travel late in the game.
Yeah, and did you see his attempt at getting the charge, where he just kind of ducked out of the way and also got the blocking foul?
Yeah, I saw a lot of those. I mean, I didn't say he's a good defender, but he's trying. I think maybe.
I want to know what he's thinking on the plays where he fouls somebody and he like throws his one hand up in the air. Like, he's not really complaining to the referee. He's more so like, why does this keep happening to me? You know? It happens at least like three times a game.
It's like, I don't get it, man. What the hell?
Yeah, why does this keep happening? I really wonder why this is keeping happening to you. I mean, what could it be? Is it Torrey Craig? No. Jamal Murray? No. Is it you? Maybe.
It's got to be a Paul Millsap problem. That's why. It has to be Paul. You think they bring
also,
him back?
Also, another prediction. Marcus Gasol will be a Denver Nugget next season.
Yuck. Keep that away. I'd rather have Paul Millsap on the team than Marcus Gasol.
Man, you're crazy.
Are you serious? At the same price, you'd rather have this version of Marcus Gasol?
Same price? Marcus Gasol's going to make like $5 million next year.
Yeah, what do you think Paul Millsap's going to make?
I think he's going to make a bit more.
Around 5-7, 5-8.
Yeah.
Dude, he can barely play, man. He doesn't show up until the second half of every game. He shows up for a quarter and then leaves. Come on,
he's a good
man.
Veteran presence.
Yeah, he is. That's why I think he'll get like $7 million instead of 5, like Mark. You got to be fair with these guys, man. Raj, how much would they have to pay you to take Mason Plumlee onto your roster going into next year?
It depends on the team, but they'd have to pay me $14.5 million, his contract this year.
Man, Mason Plumlee, this guy is a walking foul machine. My God.
I will never forgive him if I was a Nuggets fan for that play on Anthony Davis. I still don't know why they had to add Jokic and Plumlee in. Obviously, they were afraid of the lob, but I still think that could have probably been better coached. But yeah, Plumlee is he's off the books.
I don't mind having him in there in that situation, but he's got to know better, man. The guy's a robot on defense. That's pretty much what I've established out of this situation. Josh, how much does Jeremy Grant make next year? Right now, he's got a player option for 9.3. He's obviously turning that down. How much is he going to really demand on the market?
I mean, some people are saying up to $20 million. I'm not sure if I can go that far. If he's on like a shorter term contract, maybe he'll get more money. It might be one of those situations where they offer him like 3 years, $60 million, or he can take 4 years at, you know, maybe less than that, like $17 million per or something like that. So I think he's going to make more than Harrell is, for sure. So I'm going to say between 15 and 20 per year.
Okay. Well, I hope Denver brings him back, man. He is a pivotal piece of this team going forward. All right, moving on. We're going to go to the finals, guys. We're looking at a Wednesday evening start. I believe it's 9 o'clock, right? Like usual, all the finals games are going to be at 9 o'clock. September 30. I never thought I'd say those words, that the finals start on September 30th, but here we are. What a strange season we've had. And Raj, your favorite player, the King, is making his 10th appearance in the finals, going against Josh, your favorite player, Jimmy G Buckets. Boy, give me that. He is so effing locked in right now, it's not even funny.
I'm a Miami Heat fan now.
I think Raj is too. Yeah, yeah, I know. I get it. It's fine. Yeah.
I'm going to be rocking. I'm trying to find a Heat jersey somewhere. I might have to ask Jimmy Butler where he gets his connections. But I obviously am anti-LeBron, but again, respect his game and everything. But we'll get into the X's and the O's.
Yeah, let's just dive into it, man. We're looking at a Heat team that obviously has a lot of three-point shooting between, you know, Robinson, Hero, Jay Crowder, Josh, your favorite player, Goran Dragic, who might actually be your favorite player, all those kind of things. And then versus a Lakers team that, you know, is really just heavy inside, right? A team that is really reliant on their bigs doing most of the work. So pretty much we're going to be looking at Anthony Davis trying to clown everybody on the Heat's roster, right? Or are we going to see Dwight Howard come back for a revenge series?
I mean, for me, the biggest thing for Miami, first of all, is making the Lakers play the style that they don't want to and playing the same type of game as Miami, where it's more fast-paced, shooting a lot of threes. Because if it comes down to that, then I think that the Heat have a really good chance. And I think the biggest thing in this series, obviously, which is a lot of people have already brought this up, is like the zone defense versus the Lakers. Because the Lakers are not a good shooting team. And I think that Spoelstra might end up playing zone a majority of the game. He already played zone against Boston. It was a really good three-point shooting team, you know, in certain games more than half of the time, right? So against a team like the Lakers, where they only have a few somewhat consistent three-point shooters, you obviously want to take out LeBron and AD as much as you can. So if you're able to make Caruso and Rondo and Danny Green and KCP take more shots than they're used to and have to beat you that way, that's ultimately what you want, right? And Spoelstra's a really good coach. I think he's a better coach than Frank Vogel. So I think Miami's going to be super competitive in this series. And ultimately, I like the Heat.
That's bold. I really look at how the Heat played their zone defense against Boston, and they had their corner defenders playing up. So they kind of had like two of their players. It was like a 2-1-2, but even the two that were supposed to be on the baseline were playing further up. I don't know if that's going to work against the Lakers, especially with LeBron being such a good passer and Rondo being so experienced. I think the fact that those two players will be able to probably get penetration with ease and give it to the Lakers. They do have some players that know how to make the right cut. And more importantly, they have players that can make the right pass. So I think they'll play a bit of zone for sure to throw off the Lakers. But I think the key really is how much they can avoid having to double Davis. Because once they double Davis, or if they feel like they need to, that really opens up the court for the other players to make an impact. If Bam is able to contain Anthony Davis, hold them to like 20 points on or 25 points with not great shooting, I think Miami has a good chance too.
What if they put someone like Crowder onto Davis? Now hear me out. I know it sounds a little absurd to not put your best defender in Bam on him, but a guy like Paul Millsap sort of put into his body onto Davis. You know what I mean? If you just keep touching him, if you push him around a bit, Anthony Davis is strong, but he plays kind of weak. So why wouldn't you have like a smaller guy just try to push him around and sort of like, in a sense, bully the guy? You know what I mean, Josh?
I think it goes back to, again, the zone defense. So if you're playing Crowder on Davis, you're basically going to be playing a zone anyway. And Miami is a quick enough team where when they double team, they're like the Raptors or like the Celtics, again, just running around the perimeter, just chasing around guys. And the Lakers are going to have to rely on a lot of secondary creation, a lot of secondary guys making plays later in the shot clock. And that's where the Lakers struggle, right? So if LeBron doesn't get, you know, an immediate action off of his pick and roll, or Davis doesn't get it off of a pick and pop or a post up, and they have to go later in the clock because Miami is just making them work all the time, I think ultimately that's advantage Miami. And they're smart enough, unlike Denver, to double team Davis in situations where they play man defense early in the series and early in games, especially not letting him go off for 20 plus points in a quarter or even 15 plus points in a quarter. They're going to shut that off quickly. I don't think Bam's going to be on Davis as much as people think. I think there's going to be a lot more zone and different types of defenses that Spoelstra is going to play. And ultimately, this is going to come down to the Lakers' execution, I think, and their offensive rebounding. and what type of lineups they decide to play, whether it's going to be a Dwight Howard at center, or if they're just going to go with Davis going against Bam at the five and just play smaller and try to beat the Heat at their own game, which again, I think it's Miami advantage in that case.
Raj, how do you contain LeBron? Because, well, I know, every team tries to do this, right? Where you lean off of him and challenge him to shoot, but this isn't LeBron from the first Cleveland Cavaliers run. Not even LeBron from the Heat. You know, this is LeBron who's actually learned how to shoot pretty well in LA. I mean, how do you slow down a monster like that?
Well, you bring him to the foul line. Where he stops himself. But no, in all honesty, I think they have the one trade that I think goes very unnoticed that Pat Riley had made was with Crowder for Justice Winslow. And then with that trade, they were also able to bring in Iguodala. So they have a few defenders that they can put on LeBron. Obviously, they have Iguodala, who's very familiar with him. He's obviously a step or even two steps slower now. They have Crowder, who's another big body, who's a bit smaller, and they have Butler, who would probably want to have the task a few possessions. So they have a few bodies to put on him. But I think the key is just to make sure that they limit the amount of easy baskets that LeBron and AD get and make the Lakers rely on secondary scoring. And I know that's way easier said than done, but if it means doubling Davis, if they're playing man, if it means trapping LeBron in the pick and roll and trying to make Caruso or KCP hit jumpers, then that's probably the better way to play it. But I expect LeBron to go for 27, 9-9 or 9-7 or something like that this series. So almost close to a triple double.
Yeah, I think LeBron's a bigger matchup disadvantage for Miami than AD is. I think that with the way Miami plays defense and how quick they are to rotate, unless Davis destroys them on the offensive boards, I don't think he's going to be as effective, especially in this series against, versus what he did versus Denver. Because Denver didn't really have specific matchups and schemes against Davis, whereas Miami's going to be a super smart team and being able to game plan him. And double and triple teaming him, try to take him away. I think he's the key for Miami to win the series. Is taking him out of the game for the most part and limiting him to low 20s every game on bad shooting, because he's forcing shots when he's not being double teamed later in the clock and just throwing different looks at him. Because I think LeBron's going to get his no matter what. So the key to the series obviously is Lakers points in the paint and offensive rebounding and how they handle the zone. And if the Lakers are able to do what Boston did in certain points in games where they would screen the ball up top and get a lot of points in the paint from the primary ball handler, then the Lakers definitely have a real shot in this series. But execution-wise, I think the Lakers' lack of a secondary option, you can look at Rondo, but I don't like Rondo against the zone. I don't think he's going to be able to create the same types of looks on pick and roll versus a zone against Miami as he did with Denver and creating Davis a ton of looks off the pick and roll.
Yeah, I think the one thing that the Lakers have had pretty, not lenient on them, but it's been an easier road for them to get to the finals, right? You're looking at a Blazers team that put up zero defense against them, a Houston team that was a lot smaller than them. So you saw AD really go off that series and LeBron really just take advantage with his size. And then the last series against the Nuggets, they just weren't as athletic, right? The LA was able to get inside anytime that they wanted to, and Jokic, he's a big guy, but he's not athletic. He's not strong. He's not fast enough to stay with those guys. So the Heat will definitely bring a lot of challenges that the Lakers, frankly, haven't had to deal with at all during their playoff run. Raj, I have one last question for you before we head out of here. Who's going to be more of the internet darling, Tyler Hero or Alex Caruso? You're muted.
This is very tough. Honestly, I'm not going to say this confidently, but I think probably Caruso has more opportunity to make some big plays than Hero. I think especially with LeBron and, like I mentioned, Anthony Davis, they love putting on a good show. So I think Caruso and Reddit loves Caruso, and the Lakers fans are just the biggest homers that we know. So I think Caruso is going to take the cake on this one. But I think stats-wise, I think Hero might actually put up better numbers, but Caruso gets more of the reels. One real quick point I want to mention is this Laker team is like composed of LeBron's greatest obstacles throughout his career. Rajon Rondo from the 2008-2010 Celtics. Dwight Howard from the 2009 Magic, Danny Green from the 2014 Spurs, Frank Vogel from the 2013 Pacers, Jason Kidd from the 2011 Mavs, Quinn Cook and JaVale McGee from the Golden State Warriors, J.R. Smith from the 2018 Finals, and Alex Caruso with his hair.
Ouch. So you're telling me LeBron is conquering all of his adversity right now in this one season.
Yeah.
It's a storybook ending, guys.
Yeah, he's collecting all of his horror curses.
Oh, man. All right, that's all the time we've got for today. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. You can find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts. Wow, that's so smooth. Google Play, Spotify,
wait.
Heat and six.
Where's the predictions?
Heat and six. Heat and six.
I'm going with the Heat, and they're gonna win it in you know what? Fuck it. Five games.
Damn it, you took my thunder. Alright, I'll take Heat and six.
Yo, just say Heat sweep, Josh.
I want to, but I'm not that brave.
But LeBron will never get swept. All right, guys. Thanks again. And until next time, peace.